Welcome to The Sailing Road. If you have ever dreamed of sailing off over the horizon, or if you just like to cruise the coast or your local lake, then this podcast is for you. In this episode, we talk with Ed and Roxanne Radonic about their extensive trailer sailing and cruising adventures. We also have some sailing news, and our product of the week will help you battle those bugs on your boat and on shore this summer. Hello, and welcome to The Sailing Road. My name is Steve Payment, and I am joined by my beautiful cruising partner and fiancé, Brandy Bryant.
Yo, yo, what's up?
So we have spent the last couple weekends on shore.
Been
lots of work. I've been, at one week I drove 1,000 miles in one week, which was ridiculous, but
lucky you.
Somehow you've got to make the money in order to pay for the cruising, so we've got to keep at it, at least for now. And we've had some fun, though. We got out and about. We actually caught up with a couple Sailing Road listeners, our friends that live here in town, Colby and Shelby. It was Colby's birthday, and
Colby and Stacy. Shelby is their daughter.
Sorry. I didn't look at my notes.
Well, at least you said their right name.
Yeah.
Where did Shelby come from?
I have no idea. So, sorry, Stacy. Colby and Stacy. It was Colby's birthday, and they invited us out, and we had a good time with them.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And Brandy had a big event last weekend, which was her 20th high school reunion.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was just locally, because I still live in pretty much the same town that I was raised in, and we went over to a big spot in Orlando called International Drive, and out of a close to 900 class, we had about 75 people show up. So nothing too crazy, but got to see some faces that, of course, haven't seen in forever. And it was a lot of fun. So we had a good time.
It was my first high school reunion ever.
Because
I had my 30th high school reunion this year and I did not go, which I have not gone to any of them. Mine's up in Michigan. I actually have two high schools, Michigan and Ohio. And somehow I never seem to make it. I think the social media has killed the high school reunion because you
definitely
keep up with where everybody's at. And we're just busy. Don't get around to it. I think I'll try to make it to my 50th, which will probably be like 6 people there.
Yeah, we'll be on the boat then and you'll be like, I ain't flying back to the States.
Do I have to leave this beach to go to a high school reunion? And then we've got a couple good things coming up. Our next trip is going to be next weekend over the Labor Day weekend. And that is, we're going back to the Hammock Dunes Resort that we've been to before.
Yep.
And this is for one of our good friend's 50th birthday. He picked that for the Labor Day weekend where he wanted to go. And so we all our boating friends are getting together to celebrate his 50th birthday. And we've talked about that place before. It's a nice resort just north of Daytona, above Ormond Beach, kind of in between Daytona and St. Augustine on the eastern side of Florida.
Palm Coast.
Palm Coast is the area. And just a beautiful, very new resort, very new marina. Everything is just tip-top shape. And we always have a lot of fun.
Well, we say that we're going there, but if anybody's watching the weather, we have lots of rain around us right now. So we'll see what the storms are doing, because we have a storm that should be passing back over Florida Wednesday and Thursday, right?
Right. So it's been a very active...
Weather permitting is this trip.
Yeah, been a very active couple weeks here in the tropics, and they all seem like they're steering right towards Florida. It seems like we've got a target on us, and then they seem to curve away, and this one's coming through the Gulf, so I think it is going to cross us, but it doesn't. I think it's still going to be a tropical storm, so we'll probably just get really wet.
Yes.
So hopefully it gets out of the way, and we can all have a good time on the Labor Day weekend. And we've got another exciting announcement that we are going to be at the Annapolis Sailboat Show this year.
We are. I'm excited. So we've got everything booked. We are set.
Yeah. October 6th through the 9th. That's Thursday through Sunday. We're going to be up there those days. I think we'll probably be at the show most days. We may go adventure around, see Washington one day. So I don't know what our full schedule is. But when it gets closer, we'll announce a time. And if there's listeners that are going, we'd love to meet up with you.
Yeah, definitely send us a message or an email or something and let us know if you're going to be there. I think we might try to set up some type of, not necessarily a meet and greet, but maybe a time that we'll be somewhere. And if anybody's around, we can all meet up and have a beverage or dinner or something and say hello to everybody.
We'll find some place to meet up for a sundowner.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Somewhere. But yeah, I'm really excited about this because, you know, growing up as a sailing kid, you always heard the Annapolis Sailboat Show was the best sailboat show. It's the biggest, the largest in-water sailboat show in the world.
That's what you've been telling me, so it better live up to it.
So we're excited, but we've gone to the Miami show, which is a great show, and the Sarasota show, which is also smaller, but it's real. St. Pete.
Yeah. Phew, been a long week already?
Yeah. You're going to have to keep correcting me here, but we're excited about it. We're going to have a good time up there and looking forward to meeting up with people. So definitely let us know if you're going to be up in that area.
And speaking of the St. Pete, I think we have come to the conclusion that we're just going to drive down for the day for the St. Petersburg boat show. Did we come to that conclusion?
Yeah, we don't know yet. We'll have to see.
I think we discussed it. All right, we'll let you know more about that.
I haven't looked at the dates on it yet, but we'll get all that worked out. And I don't know if we're speaking again this year. I haven't decided. I got to decide this week if I can.
He's a very last-minute planner, everybody. So we will let you know probably the day before.
I've been very busy. Work's been busy.
I understand, which was probably a good reason for us not to speak and to go down, enjoy, see the boats.
Probably.
We'll see.
I know how much you love to speak, though, and I wouldn't want to take that opportunity away from you.
Insert sarcasm right there.
Also on the list that I was thinking about is we talked about a little bit on the last podcast. The Olympics were just starting, I think, when we started the last podcast. And so I got a chance to watch quite a bit of the Olympic sailing.
Which I have never watched any Olympic sailing, by the way.
Yeah, you really never any kind of the dinghy sailing, the small boat sailing.
This was the first time, and it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's neat to see the different classes and the different techniques they use. Unfortunately, the U.S. was not very competitive. We did win a medal. U.S. sailor Caleb Payne won bronze in the fin class, so congratulations to Caleb. The rest of the sailors, we had some good races, and they were in the medal contention in a lot of the different categories, but then they got to the medal races and just did not do well. And so they couldn't pull it off, but it was fun to watch. I think they did better than they did in London. We didn't get any medals, so this was our first U.S. medal in sailing, I think, since 2008. So we're, they're trying to improve the program, but there's just so many great foreign sailors. And in these small boats, just the smallest little mistake or the picking the wrong side of the course or whatever, just it really, you can go from up at the front of the pack to the back of the pack in a second. Or if you have a penalty and then that sets
you
back.
Now, are those boats that we watch, is that similar to what you grew up racing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are a lot more high performance, but it's that kind of dinghy sailing. I grew up, they have lasers, and I grew up sailing in lasers.
Right.
And thistles and other small boat classes like that. So, but there was some really good racing. It was interesting. When I first started watching, they had the sailboards on. So I'd never really watched sailboard racing before. And it was interesting to see some of the different techniques. I mean, these guys are pumping the sails and doing all kinds of techniques to get them down the course and light winds and heavy winds.
Looked exhausting.
It did. It looked really exhausting. I mean, they're definitely in good shape. And so as I'm watching this, they're doing some things. They had this technique. They were on one of the, I think they were going upwind, and they're holding onto this rope. They're holding one hand on the sail and this other hand on the rope. And I couldn't really see them adjusting the rope or anything, and I wasn't sure what it was for. So I don't know why I did this, but I went and looked up, Gary Jobson was the one announcing. So I went and looked up Gary Jobson's website, wondering if he had an email contact. So I sent a note off to Gary and said, I'm joining your Olympic coverage, and I don't know if you'll get this during the Olympics, but I'm seeing some of these things in the races I didn't quite understand, and I'm a sailor, but didn't understand how they're using this rope or whatever. A couple hours later, I get an email back from Gary Jobson, which was pretty cool. That number one, he was answering his emails, but
must not have been busy.
Yeah, maybe he's not that busy, but it was pretty cool. And I'd also mentioned in the note that in the earlier races and a lot of the races that were online, there was no commentary, which didn't make sense to me. I mean, how hard is it to get somebody to watch a race and give some commentary to who's who or whatever?
Shows how unpopular it is.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe just nobody wants to watch sailing. But he responded back and said that, they would start covering more of the races as it got closer to the medal races. And so I just thought that was really nice that Gary Jobson wrote back. But what was really cool was, I think the next day, or it was on Saturday, we were watching the next sailboard race. It was a medal race. And as soon as they went to the aerial shot of somebody going upwind and holding that rope that I was talking about, Gary Jobson explained what the rope did. And essentially this rope that he put in an email, that it's a sail trim, I think, going upwind. I always thought sailboard sails were just kind of set, but they must have some way of tightening up the outhaul on the sail, and they're holding onto it. They're not really adjusting it. They're just kind of holding it tight as they go upwind. And he explained this in the email, but as soon as they did the overhead shot, he explained it again. So I affected the Olympic sailing coverage.
There you go, guys. You heard it here first.
I was very proud of that. So. But it was pretty cool. So, so Olympics are over. Hopefully we'll do better next time.
You know what you could do? Since I didn't have anybody commentating on that little bit, you could say, hey, I would love to help with commentating
exactly.
on those and see if you get a reply back.
I don't think anybody would want to hear mine because, number one, all those foreign names, you know how I am with foreign names that I'm trying to get these guys out. I'd have to practice for hours just to have all those right.
From Sweden, the guys from wherever.
It's fun listening to, Gary Jobson and Randy Smythe, I think was the other commentator's name. And Randy was a former Olympic sailor. And, you know, getting their perspective on, you know, the people that are in race, you get some of the backstories, you figure out who the best sailors are, they're pointing them out. You know, some of the countries are just known to be, you know, they've won multiple medals before, those types of things. But as I talked about in the America's Cup coverage, I think sailing in general just needs to do a better job at explaining as the race is going on why people are doing certain things. And I think you can do it in a way that doesn't irritate people that know sailing and still help educate people, you know, do at the beginning of the race. Like when they start off a race, people that don't watch sailboat racing don't understand why everybody heads a different direction.
Oh, yeah. Who was sitting there with us and said that?
Somebody was watching the race with
us. Somebody had stopped by the house when we were watching it, and they were like, why are they going opposite directions?
How's that guy going to win? He's going the opposite direction.
Yep.
And they didn't realize they're going upwind, which you can go either way and get to the same point
just
as fast.
That might have even been Christian that said that, actually.
But it was, you know, just some of these things that they don't explain at all. And you've got the Olympics where a lot of people are watching sports that they've never watched before.
Well, you know, you're buddy-buddy now with Mr. Jobson. You can just send him that email.
I'm not going to irritate Mr. Jobson anymore. He's going to block my emails. But
that's Steve Payman again.
It was interesting. It was cool to watch all the different types of racing. And speaking of racing, I also got an update from my buddy Rock, who is my high school friend that we met up with when we were up in Chicago. We talked about on the previous podcast when we went to the America's Cup. He took us out sailing with him. And Rock, this is his second year. He's gone in the Chicago to Mackinac race, which is one of the oldest sailing races in the world. This was their 108th year.
Wow.
And it is the oldest freshwater sailing race in the world. And so it's very traditional, one of the most professional. Every America's Cup sailor probably sails in the Chicago Mackinac race, gets on somebody's boat and sails it. And they have a cruising class. And, you know, Rock bought his boat a couple years ago. And last year he went in the race the first time. So they had such a great time. They're doing it again this time. So you get some buddies together. Another buddy of mine from high school went with him. And this year was a lot more challenging. He sent me an email with some pictures in it. They had a storm come across from Wisconsin, some big storms, I think, throughout the whole weekend. But one of them was some really rough storms that rolled across Lake Michigan. And, you know, Rock's got a big boat. He's got a 36-foot full keel island packet. It's an island packet Estero. And they got knocked down.
Holy.
He said they thought the winds from what they saw was about, from what his instrument said, was up to about 40 knots. And he said they barely had out any sail. And so they got knocked down at 40 knots. But you're racing too, so you're probably pushing it a little bit. But they had 340 boats enter and 20 dropped out with damage from the storm.
Gosh.
And one of them in the storm lost their rudder post and the boat sank.
Oh my gosh.
Luckily, you know, there was enough people, sailboats around racing that they got the signal and turned around and came back and rescued the people before, because we know how cold that water was when you're up
gosh,
there.
It was,
you know,
so
even
cool.
In the summer, you're talking 60 degree water, you know, high 60s maybe in that area. So you don't want to be in that water very long, especially with the storm coming through. But I laughed because Rock said they did sustain damage. They were able to keep going, but he said it was cruiser damage. And he defined cruiser damage as the fact that his microwave busted off the wall when they got knocked down.
So, oh, no, no popcorn.
Exactly. So that was cruiser damage, which he didn't have any problems. And they made it all the way there. But I'll put a picture up in the podcast notes, on the show notes on our website, that he took of his radar. He's got satellite radar on his instrument panel, and it was just red across
Yikes,
the board.
It's scary.
And I can't imagine. I mean, if it was like that, we would be running for cover. But when you're racing, you're like, we got to keep going. This is a race. You know, you're going to make it through. And you're already, and there's no
Who's
real.
Going to be the man?
On Lake Michigan, there's nowhere to go either way. You just got to figure out a way through
him
it.
I remember saying that.
Yeah. So that was, it was pretty scary. But he, and actually they finished fifth in the cruising class.
Oh, good
so
for
I was
them.
Very proud of them.
Yeah.
They finished.
Out of six boats?
Yeah, no, I don't know how many boats. When they first finished, they told them they were third, which they were really excited about. And then they re-examined the results or whatever. They ended up coming
fifth.
But fifth is still
fifth
great. Out of all those boats. I don't know how many were in the cruising class, though. But they did great. It was fun to hear the stories on that. What else we got here? We mentioned the last podcast, and I don't think I'd had it released yet. But I did put out the new video on our $200 air conditioning setup.
Got lots of feedback on that.
Got lots of feedback.
The comments are always awesome.
It's fun
to get the
comments.
We don't care if you have good to say, bad to say, negative, funny. We love the comments because it helps us learn. Some of the comments that got put on there, we were like, oh, crap. We didn't even think about that.
There's things you do not even think about. It's funny when you sail, too. We sail and we do videos, and people always point out our, you know, how their sails are trimmed and everything. And it doesn't really bother me because in some cases it may be something I don't even think about that, you know, we could do better. But in this case, it was really funny that we've been using this same air conditioner setup for
since we had the boat
6 years.
Well, oh yeah, because we had it on the other boat.
And you know, I've got locks on it to where when we leave, we lock it up and all these other things. And some guy pointed out, all you have to do, the way I have it set up right now, is push the air conditioner through the hole. And you could walk right into my boat.
Well, it's a skinny hole.
Yeah, but it's big enough for somebody to squeeze through. And I'm just like, I read that comment, and I was like, I am such an idiot. I've been doing this for 6 years, and nobody's known my
and
friends.
And to think that I said put that latch for safety, and now what am I going to do? Now that's all I'm going to think about is somebody coming on and kicking it in.
And I figured out a way to fix it, but no, I think that's the advantage of YouTube. Even though it made me look like an idiot, I learned, so I figured out something. So but we don't mind if you comment on our videos that we're
clueless. Oh, please, we love the feedback.
Yeah, but it's fun. So so that's out there. So go check it out. We've got some more coming up. Brandy's working on some other areas. We'll get some new videos out here soon. Another thing I want to mention that we've started working on, you know, since we've been cruising, I think everybody that spends a lot of time on the water becomes more environmentally conscious.
Definitely.
Because you go to these beautiful places and then you see trash, a lot of trash. And even just sailing through open water offshore, you see so much plastic and plastic bags and plastic bottles. And so we've become much more conscious.
Yeah, we've definitely dropped our garbage down, I would say a good 30-40% by getting rid of
Plastic bottles
was the big thing because we drink a ton of water. So we don't use the plastic bottles anymore. As you've heard, we use the big Coleman, 5-gallon, 10-gallon containers.
Right.
And we fill that up with our filtered water at home, and whether we need one or two, but that is our water supply for drinking and food and stuff. So
we use reusable bottles.
Huge, huge difference.
So I read this story that got me thinking. Another area that I've been trying to fix is you go to the grocery store and you end up coming home with, you know, six or eight or 10 of these plastic bags. And you know, probably 2 years ago, I went out and bought the reusable bags, the nylon bags from the grocery store. But inevitably, you forget to take them in with you. And you're like, I'm not going back
Always.
Out to the car.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to get the plastic bags again. And we do recycle plastic bags, but they're still just, it's a mess. And I felt bad about it. And I keep trying to do something about it. So I read this article that has turned us around. And
didn't we talk about this one?
No, we haven't talked about it.
Okay.
Yet. It turns out that the UK, at least I don't think we did, but the UK has started charging 7 cents a bag for these plastic bags if you go to the grocery store and you don't have a reusable bag. And they started this over a year ago. And since they've started, now a year later, usage of plastic grocery bags in the UK has gone down 90%.
That's insane. That's awesome.
It's awesome. just a little incentive or penalty has churned it around.
I think our major grocery stores need to do the same thing. Yeah. That would just be...
So it's... And the fact is, I mean, we can say, and we're real good about recycling these bags and everything, but it's still using up a lot of resources. And the problem with these bags, they say the number one problem is they're so light that they fly, you know, away. People don't realize that they turn around and the wind's picked them up and they're gone.
Right.
And then they end up in the water. So it's a big problem with these plastic bags. And so I've really been trying to get us to stop using them.
So, and how did you get us to stop using them,
so
Steve?
So I used this story and I came up with our own bag program called Bags to Boat. And the program that I got Brandy to agree to, I don't know if she had a choice, but she agreed to, is that if we, either of us, walk into a store, doesn't matter if it's a grocery store or a drugstore or wherever, and we come out with a plastic bag, for each bag, you owe $1 into our boat fund.
Yep. And we have on our refrigerator one of those dry erase boards, and one corner of it says Bags to Boat, and we put little check marks, and I think we have
$5. The problem is the program has been so successful that there is almost no money going into the Bags to Boat fund anymore.
That's good.
I think we're up to a total of $7.
Oh, are we?
Yeah.
I just recently messed up, and that was when I went to Walgreens. So
right. So I think the program's working, but now I'm thinking that we need to turn the program around and make it a positive incentive every time we go to the grocery store or another store. So
I live at the grocery store. That is not fair.
Well, you can say every time we go to the grocery store, I usually came out with, you could look at it and say, I would have come out with 8 bags if I would have got this. And we put a quarter a bag into the, so then you're rewarding yourself for doing a good thing.
Yeah. We'll discuss this.
I don't know. If somebody has a better idea how to turn this thing around or a program, but...
But think about it. You guys should do that too. Start saving.
Yeah, start saving. It really does make a difference, and figure out a way to change the whole family around. Use it for money to go on a vacation, whatever. But yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a dollar. It could just be, you know, a quarter or 10 cents or something. But
it definitely changed our mindset. Mm-hmm. And we do not forget. And if we do forget,
I literally have walked in, grabbed the cart, started walking, turned around, yeah, walked back to the car. Because I am constantly at the grocery store. Yeah. Always.
So, well, it's working. So, hopefully it'll make a difference to some other folks. And maybe we'll, in the United States, they'll start doing this so we can stop wasting so much resources on these silly plastic bags. We've got another item. This is something we've been thinking about for a while, and we really need the listeners' help with.
I'm excited about this, people. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, this is a really special request on some help we need from you. Brandy's mentioned on the podcast before that she has been diagnosed with leukemia. And because of that, we really want to raise money for leukemia research because it's made a big difference in our lives. So why don't you tell a little bit about your story and
okay, so in 2009, long story short, I went through a huge breakup and lost about 20 pounds. I was laying in bed one night and felt a bump in my stomach. Didn't know what it was. Thought maybe, holy crap, I'm that skinny. I can feel my organs. Went to the doctor. Doctor said, who knows? Let's do some blood work. I go to Tuesday, do blood work. Wednesday, I get a phone call back to come and see them on Thursday. And lo and behold, I was diagnosed with chronic myeloid leukemia, which is a blood cancer, if you don't know what leukemia is, and went straight to an oncologist. And from there, with it being in chronic, if you can put lucky and cancer in the same sentence, I am that girl. So with it being chronic, my therapy was basically just taking one pill a day until we could see results. And my first pill was called Gleevec. And I took that for, I guess it was almost a year. My body started becoming immune to it. So we switched myself off of that and I started taking Sprycel. The one thing about the Gleevec, which is interesting, I think when I first started taking it, it had only been out on the market for 3 years.
Yeah, so that's one of the big changes, and that's why we want to really, you know, make the point that this, you know, there's a lot of, you hear everybody's trying to fundraise for different types of medical conditions and issues and cancer in general and the Cancer Society, blood cancer research is one of the most important research. You can go on the internet and do a search on the importance of blood cancer research, and it will show you that what they're doing at a molecular level in the blood cancer research will help all cancers. And as Brandy said, when she got diagnosed, she was at a lucky time because her leukemia, CML, in the early 2000s had a 30% 5-year survival rate. That was your average survival rate. Mm-hmm. Of 30% of the people made it 5 years. And now, with these new drugs, the one she did take and the new one she's taking, they're up to 80 to 90% of the people are still living at 5 years, and they don't see an end in sight. They could have a normal life.
Right.
So it's a huge difference. And it's the advances that they're making in research. These drugs didn't exist, you know, years ago, and now they're there. So that's why we're speaking up, and we need your help, and we're going to ask you to help support us in the annual Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in the United States and around the world, the Light the Night Walk and fundraising that we do every October. And so we have thousands of listeners that listen to this podcast every month. If people just give a few dollars to the cause, it's going to make a big difference. And so we're going to put a link in the show notes with it. This goes directly to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We've set up a team page there.
Yep. And you can see everything is strictly leukemia, lymphoma, has nothing to do with us. It's all their website. Yeah. So every dime that we raise goes straight to them.
So. And you can sign up to, if you'd rather sign up to be on our team and actually raise money at your work and then go on the walk in your local area. That would be great. If you just want to, it takes you a couple minutes at most to go on and just put in a couple dollars.
Literally 3 clicks, I think.
So, you know, if everybody just went in there and put a dollar, it would make a huge difference. But, you know, a lot of people aren't. So if you're going in there, throw a couple extra dollars in, and that'll make up for the people that don't. And it will just make a huge difference. One other thing I want to mention is that, you know, Brandy's lucky, but a lot of the people, the second most common leukemia is called AML. That's the acute version of what Brandy has. And currently only 25% of those people that are diagnosed are still alive at 5 years. If you think about that, if you had somebody in your family that got diagnosed, 25% chance is just awfully scary. And they're making a huge advances every year that they think that they could really wipe out blood cancer with the research they're doing. So another thing we're going to ask you to do too, we're going to put a link in the show notes and we'd like you to really consider, is being a blood marrow donor. And there's a program and a great organization called Be The Match. If you go to bethematch.com, I'll put the link in the show notes. And there's a simple process you go through. They do a cheek swab, and they put you in a database. And if you match up with someone, then you could save one of these people that has a 25% chance to live. A lot of these people never find a donor, and that's why they die at 25%, because they just can't find a match. And
it's such a simple process. Literally, simple process. All you do is swab your mouth, and they take it from there.
Right. It is $100 to sign up for that in the process, and that helps cover all their costs. But if you think about $100, you could spend $100 to save somebody's life. And donating bone marrow is not that complicated anymore. They can do it through, I think, a blood transfusion and a couple other processes. But it is huge. It's a huge need, and we'd really like the listener support on that.
And one of the reasons we didn't even talk about why we have started doing this, you've heard us talk about our Lake Conway Wipeout, which was a charity event that we started 5 years ago on the water with a boating crew that we are super close friends with. And we did that event for almost 5 years raising money, and we raised over $30,000 for that event for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Straight everything we raised went to them. And so we stopped doing that event, and for the past 2 years, we felt awful because we haven't been raising money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Ooh, I'm getting emotional. And so that is a reason why we are back to, you know, trying it another route with our listeners, our podcasters. Who knows, we might even make a video on it and throw that on YouTube as well. But what's $5 in your pocket when you can help save a life, folks?
So. Absolutely. Yeah, I'll put up some pictures and videos of the of our wipeout event. I don't think we've ever really talked about that much on the podcast.
I think I've said it maybe once or twice, but it was a quick mention.
Essentially, the event that we set up was kind of on a lark. I lived on a lake, and a buddy of mine and Brandy were big fans of the show Wipeout, which if anybody watched American TV years ago, there was a show where contestants would run along these big inflatable obstacles and they'd get knocked off by stuff. And it was just really funny to watch. And so we decided to do that on the lake that I lived on. And so we just on a lark one weekend, everybody always pulled up the sandbar on the lake. We got all our friends together and all of our pull behind ski toys, you know, float tubes and everything. And we just tied them together, inflatable boats, anything we could think of. And we created a course that was about 70 feet long. And people ran down it, and we would time them when we had silly prizes that we gave away. And we literally put this event together in about 2 weeks.
We did it all on donation. We got sponsors for the event.
And we didn't do it. That was the first year we didn't do anything.
Year, no, absolutely.
We didn't do anything. It was just for fun, for our friends. We all just sat around and laughed and had a good time. The second year, we did it again, and we put a lot of money into it, and because everybody wanted to do it again, and we ended up spending a lot of money but not getting anything out of it. And the third year, we said, let's start raising money with us. Let's turn it into a charity. And the third, fourth, and fifth year, it just grew and grew and grew. So you'll see when I post the pictures here, the last year we had over 600 boats, probably about 3,000 people. The obstacle course became very complex.
Yeah, our partner who did this with us, he made some of the biggest contraptions. At one point, we had a huge water slide. We had a arm that's like a sweeper arm that went around in circles. We had a balance beam on it. So it was really a lot of fun, but it just became too much work. So, but we raised over $30,000 for Leukemia and Society for it. And it was rewarding. It was nice to know that we were doing it for something that means and so close to home. So,
So we'll put all the links in there, and the walks happen in October, so you'll probably hear about this a couple other times, but
we've got a month.
We want to throw it out there, and we'll just mention it shortly on the other podcast, but definitely get out there, look at the link, click on the link in the show notes, and donate. We really appreciate it. So I think that is it for the opening chat news, and we're going to take a quick break here, and up next is part one of our interview with Ed and Roxanne Radonic. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and we're going to head into our interview for this episode. And this interview came about because we've had several listeners since we started the podcast that have heard about our trailer sailing and some of the small boat sailing. And they've asked, you know, we talk with cruisers all over the world, but they're also interested in more of the local cruising and local sailors and trailer sailing, things like that. So I've been looking up and I've got some other people lined up for some interviews along those lines. And so as I was doing some research and looking for people that have had some interesting stories around trailer sailing, I came across the Radonic family and some of their trailer sailing adventures. There was a story that was written that I thought was really interesting. So I was really impressed with the variety of trips that this family did, and both the what they did on the water and how far they would trailer just to get to somewhere, which we've talked about. That's the advantage of having a trailer sailor, is you can open up huge amounts of water just by hopping in the, you know, putting it on the trailer and driving 60 miles an hour. You're, you know, when you can move it 40, 50 knots, you can really cover some ground. So so I thought that was really neat. And the fact that the Radonics, when they were trailer sailing, had the same boat as us, a MacGregor 26. So that all kind of came together, and I really thought it would be great to talk to them. So in this first part of the interview, we talk about their start in sailing and some of their trailer sailor cruising. So here is the interview.
My wife here, she decided to join in.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Her name is Roxanne.
Well, hi. Roxanne, welcome. And I'm sitting here with Brandy.
Hello.
My fiance.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And are the kids cruising with you right now also?
No, we're actually not cruising. Although I was in the Bahamas the other week, but we're back home right now.
Ah, okay. I thought maybe you were still out. So.
Yeah, but when we do still cruise with the kids, they're 12 and 16 right now, and 16-year-olds away right now at a summer camp. And the 12-year-old's playing video games. I asked him to join us. He said, that sounds boring.
a typical answer from a teenager, right? Or a smaller child.
Yeah, is 12-year-old.
Is he running around doing Pokemon Go? It seems like every teenager of that age right now is obsessed. The productivity of all teenagers has gone down even worse than it normally is.
Yeah, I don't think he's discovered that one yet. I've been hearing about it in the news recently.
Right.
I think this weekend a huge accident was caused on a highway up here in Toronto, on one of the biggest highways. We're from Canada, up in Canada. He was trying to catch some Pokemon thing in the middle of the highway and caused an accident.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I have a 19-year-old and he, of course, grew up with Pokemon. So yes, of course, he is doing it as well. Him and five friends today went storming out of the house on skateboards, bikes. He's like, I can't drive, Mom. I'm like, oh, Lord, I don't want you in a car doing it, period. So
I read a news story said that there was a unexpected side effect that all these kids are complaining that they're actually sore because they're actually getting up and moving rather than sitting in front of their video games.
Well, that's good. I just hope no one is hit by a car or something not paying attention.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started. Really wanted to kind of start off and get a little bit of your background. I think the main reason that I tracked you down is that we'd had a number of listeners asked for more trailer sailing stories, kind of like what we do right now. And kind of searching around the internet and found a story you'd written about kind of all the different adventures that you and the family had had years ago with your MacGregor 26M, the same boat we had. So I want to reach out and get a little bit of background and kind of learn more about how you guys got started in sailing and go from there. So what's the background on what got you interested first in sailing?
Well, got into boating, just general boating, when I was about 20 years old, just around the time I met Roxanne, when we were dating, and just started out with some small runabouts, 14, 15, 16 foot runabouts. And Roxanne's family owns a cottage up in the northern north of Toronto here in the northern Canadian country, and so we obviously used the boat there a bit, but we found ourselves trailering that little motorboat all around the lake systems, and there's like many lakes and bays and lots of things to do up here in Canada. But we found ourselves using the boat more away from the cottage. It actually, the cottage is a Canadian word for lake house.
Right.
More so, and we were spending money staying at hotels or bed and breakfasts. We like to, we like to do that kind of traveling and exploring. So we found ourselves all over the place, and then came time where we thought, hey, maybe we should get a boat that we could sleep on. We thought that would save us some money on accommodations, and we started looking into those type of boats, and they were very expensive, and the MacGregor was a very affordable option for trailering, still having accommodations, and we liked the fact that it was a kind of a hybrid power boat. You can plane, it's got the large motor, and you can sail as well. And that was our first, experience with sailing. I think just prior to that, I bought a dinghy that I messed around with at the cottage, a sailing dinghy. So I learned a little bit about sailing, just self-taught. And then we got this boat. So we lived down more in the city, in Toronto, by one of the Great Lakes there, Lake Ontario. And actually got a membership at a yacht club and put the boat there at a dock. So I know a lot of trailer sailors will, one of the other advantages is you're not having to do that. You could just store it in your property or your driveway. But we did that with the regular motorboats, and we found it, you know, a little bit inconvenient. Every time you want to use the boat, you gotta haul it down somewhere. And this way, having it in the water, we got more use of it because you know the mast would be up and everything. You could just go after work, jump in the boat, and use it. So, you know, I know it's not cost effective for everybody, but we were able to do that. And also that was my first experience in yacht sailing, sailboat racing. I joined the club and I signed up for that, and the guy asked me, "Oh, what kind of boat do you have?" And I told him McGregor, and he kind of laughed. You probably experienced that yourself,
right?
All the time.
Yeah, especially when it comes to sailboat racing. But you know what? It did teach me. That's where I learned to sail, because it forced you to go in directions you wouldn't normally go, and I learned how to sail. I also, you know, realized the boat really wasn't made for that. But I still participated for probably 2-3 years, and you know, it was a lot of fun.
Oh, it's great fun. Those beer can races, I think, you know, it's all handicapped anyway. So you can get out there with anything and sail and get the experience.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so let me think. I forgot where I was going.
Well, it was kind of where the progression. So you had it at the dock for a while, and I imagine you're doing the racing. When did you kind of transition back to the, hey, the family likes to go on trips? That was why we originally bought this.
Right, right. So maybe Roxanne would like to chime in here.
We always planned 2 or 3 trips every year. So even though it was at the dock, we always made sure we went away for several weeks a year. So we planned trips to Georgian Bay, or whether we went to the New York State, to the Finger Lakes. We always made big trips where we would trailer it. So that was always part of our plan.
Yeah.
Even when it was at a dock, we always did
that. So the yacht club was the place that it just kind of sat and allowed us to use it during the week or easily or the weekend. But as Roxanne said, in the summer, we'd plan 2-3 trips where they were week-long trips, and we would be able to trailer it somewhere far. And, you know, throughout the year, some of the other sailors would kind of smirk at us, but then they were very jealous when they'd see me, you know, taking the mast down myself and putting it out in the trailer, and they'd say something like, "Oh, you're pulling the boat out of the water early for the season," mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Oh no, I'm just going up to, you know, Georgian Bay, which is like a 2-hour car drive, but you could never get there with a traditional boat." And there was beaches up there for those that aren't familiar with the area, islands, a lot of cool sailing out there that they could never get to. And they're like, "Oh, and so you're going to leave it up there for the rest of the season?" I'm like, "Oh no, we'll be back in a week."
Right.
And they were like, "Oh, geez, wish I could do that."
Exactly. That's definitely the flexibility. We talk to people about that all the time. In fact, we've met a number of cruisers that have gone around the world that have come back and said they're considering getting a trailer sailor like the McGregor, just because you still get all the cruising fun and they're very comfortable as far as the setup inside. But, you know, you have that flexibility to go all over.
Yeah, exactly. And as Roxanne said, we did the Finger Lakes, New York State there. We went down in New York City, went around Manhattan Island, up the Hudson River, down the New Jersey coast, out east a little bit in the Halifax area, and all over Ontario. So it was a very versatile boat that way.
Yeah, I saw that you did quite a few of the, was it the Severn and some of the lock chains up through those areas in Canada?
That's right. I almost forgot. That's part of the Great Loop.
Right.
If you do the Great Loop throughout North America, and then you get up into Canada through the Trent Severn waterway. And we did the entire waterway. I forget how many, you know, locks there are. There's so many. And a few very interesting ones, like the Marine Railway, which will kind of put your boat on an actual railway type car, but it's designed to, it's basically like an oversized travel lift that could lift 4, 5, or 6, I think up to 8 or 10 boats at once and take them over
a large hill.
Yeah, like a few hundred yard hill up onto the next lake system and drop you back in the water. Takes you over a road. Yeah, the cars stop as the thing carries all these boats over. It's called the Marine Railway up in Ontario. You can look it up.
Yeah, actually, I had never heard of, you know, I've saw some of the ones that were kind of like a rotating elevator and some of those. But when you mentioned the Big Chute Railway, I was like, I don't know if I remember seeing that one. So I went and found a video of it, and I will post it along with this story. And you're right, it really is neat. It's, you know, you just watch the boats get loaded on this travel lift. It kind of goes out of the water, just like going up a ramp. And, you know, they block the traffic and it comes down the other side. And the video I saw had a very large cabin cruiser, probably a 40-foot boat in the travel lift. And it was amazing. So I'll definitely put a video of it so the listeners can check that out.
And the cool part is you actually get to ride in your boat while you go up the hill. They don't make you get out and walk.
Yeah, that's right. I did see that. I thought that was pretty neat.
I'm going to have to see this video because I'm kind of in awe on what you guys are talking about.
It's hard
about,
to picture it because it's essentially like they have the travel lift straps, but the bottom of the boat is sitting on kind of a hard floor on this travel lift, and then it just drives right up over this mound from one lake to the other one.
Yikes, sounds intimidating.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting engineering.
And depending on the size of the boats, it could take, you know, multiple boats. So there's a whole bunch of boats riding in it at once. You really can't take a sailboat otherwise, unless it's a very shallow draft, but McGregor can go through it.
And did you have to have the mast down? Or I think on one side it looked like you could probably even leave a mast up.
Yeah, you could probably have your mast up going through it. The reason we had the mast down is because many other parts of the Trent Severn cannot accommodate the mast due to low bridges.
Right.
Right, so we just took the mast down for that trip, for those trips, and we were a motorboat. So there's the flexibility, right?
Right. We do a lot of those trips also, where either we're meeting up with our boating friends, and we know we're just going to be in a marina all weekend, and it's a time of year there's not much, you know, wind for sailing. We have one coming up this weekend where we're going to go down a river into a lake and pretty much sit in a freshwater spring all weekend, and we don't bother putting up the mast because we're not there for that. We're going to be just hanging out with friends, cruising, and having a good time playing in the water. So
we're the only sailboat in the group, so yeah. It's kind of fun whenever we pull up and everybody's looking at us because all you got are the motorboaters and then our little sailboat.
It's nice to have that flexibility.
Yeah, and the McGregor, you know, the mast does go up relatively easily. You could do it yourself, one person, and I got pretty good at it. I could probably put it up in an hour and a half, take it down in an hour or a little less.
Yeah, we've got it down. We're with the two of us. Brandy's really gotten good. She knows pretty much where everything goes just like I do. So we each have our tasks, and we've got it down under 30 minutes. Now,
yeah.
But we leave the boom on. We leave everything on. So all our sails are on when we're trailering, all the boom, everything. Everything's still attached. All the stays, shrouds, except for the front stay is the only thing that really is unattached. So we've got it pretty much where we can do it very quickly.
Yeah, that's good when you got a helper. Roxanne was always busy looking after the kids.
Right.
We had this, the McGregor, I think, how old were the kids?
They were 7 and 4, maybe.
Oh, yeah, you definitely had your handful.
No, even younger than that, because I remember was 5 on our first trip to the Bahamas. So I think we got the McGregor when our youngest one was like 2. And we sold the McGregor just before he turned 5. So, yeah, 2 young kids running around waiting for the boat to be set up was
patient, took a lot of patience. Well, tell me a little bit about another one I thought was kind of unique was the going up to New York and cruising, doing a circumnavigation of Manhattan. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, that was interesting. And there is a... what do you call it, a boat ramp, just under the George Washington Bridge on the west side of the Hudson, directly under the bridge. So found a boat ramp there and, you know, set the boat up, put it through it in the water, and going down the Hudson, going by the Statue of Liberty, very interesting. And, you know, all the skyscrapers and the big city and up the East River, and under the big bridges.
Did you go into a marina somewhere, or did you anchor out? Did you go actually into the city?
I think we did go into the one marina at the foot of the, it used to be the World Trade Center. I think it's still called the it may still be called the World Trade Center marina there, right across down in the financial district of Manhattan.
Yeah, I think that's where they did the America's Cup races this just a month or two ago when they were there. Looked like it. There was a marina right near there, and they were right off the where the World's Trade Center is.
We spent a lot of time afterwards continuing down the coast towards New Jersey, and it was more like cottage country down there. We were surprised it was how it changes so quickly.
Right. Yeah, New Jersey has some, I mean, essentially farmland when you get all the way out to the tip of it. So
it's very beautiful.
Yeah, it's always the fun part of cruising is adventuring from the water places that people can never discover by land.
Yeah, and in Jersey, there's along the Jersey Shore, and then there's some little inlets and canals and things that you wouldn't normally be able to go with a conventional sailboat, but with the dagger board that you could just pull up, bring your draft down to about 12 inches, it's gets you into a lot of places.
Oh, absolutely. We love being able to go in the skinny water, and it's going to be one of the big transitions when we go to a bigger boat is getting used to not having that unless we get something with a lifting keel.
You don't need a dinghy. You just pull right up to the beach and you step out.
Yeah, absolutely. That saves also.
Yeah.
Another massive trip that you guys did that I read was you went from Toronto all the way to Nova Scotia, which I, you know, not knowing the distances up there, I did a little quick search and it looked to me it was about 1,100 miles. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's about right.
That's so a huge trip in a trailer sailor.
Yeah, we trailered it out there. That was actually our last trip. So I had sold the boat to a fellow out in Nova Scotia, and he'd flown out to Toronto to have a look at it and, you know, liked the boat. We got our MacGregor fully loaded, so we got every single upgrade you could think of. We had the full enclosure.
Yeah, I did see you had the full enclosure.
I like that full enclosure. I spoke very highly of wanting one of those.
Yeah, it's definitely a must. It extends, enlarges your boat. You got another living area and protects you from the elements and the sun and everything else. And I wouldn't want a boat without that. So I said I delivered the boat for him. And so we drove it out to Nova Scotia, and we got to spend a little time there sailing and showing him the ropes as well. And it was our first experience in salt water. And
New York was salt water.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, we had Roxanne's reminding we had salt
a little
water.
Coastal area there.
Yeah, New York's more brackish.
Brackish, yeah, you got half of it, half and half.
Yeah, but with the tides, like you don't really get the tides around New York as like on the Hudson as much as where we were here. They had pretty high tides.
Yeah, they had huge tide differences there.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a little off topic, but there's
Bay of Fundy
in New Brunswick in Canada is the world's largest tides, 50-foot tides.
Holy cow!
Wow.
Well, that's the great thing about the MacGregor, too, with the flat bottom. We've had times where the tide's gone out, and we wake up in the morning, we realize we're sitting on the bottom, but, you know, there's no harm.
Yeah, no harm. And, pull your dagger board up, you won't heel over very much.
Right.
But, at that time there, we kind of upgraded to, well, I wouldn't say upgrade, different boat, different kind of sailing. The keel boat.
And was that kind of your, when you went and said we're going to sell the MacGregor, you had in mind that you were going to move to a larger cruising boat?
Well, this is the thing. When we bought the MacGregor, we weren't sure if we were going to go. We did want a larger boat eventually, but we weren't sure if we wanted a power boat or a sailboat. So, you know, if someone's in that situation, MacGregor's a great boat to transition to, because usually people buy a few boats and work their way up, and that was kind of a boat that exposed us to sailing. And if we decided we didn't like sailing, we probably would have bought a larger power boat. But we decided we did like sailing, and we wanted a larger sailboat.
Okay, we're going to stop there for this episode. And it was fun talking to the Radonics. They really put a lot of miles on their MacGregor 26. And if you check out the show notes, I'll put some information on some of the different places that they went and some of the pictures of their MacGregor 26. And
which
also,
I really love their canopy enclosure.
They have a nice full enclosure, which we have not upgraded to yet. And also put a video up of the Big Chute Railway that they talked about. And it is really interesting. Essentially, you know, put your boat in a travel lift and...
Yeah, I still need to see that, by the way.
Oh, I didn't realize
you had to. Yeah, no, we started to talk about it, or we talked about it, and then we went to go look at it, and I think we got sidetracked, so...
Right. Well, we'll pull it up. I'll put it in the show notes. And it's really interesting. Essentially, just travel, you lift your boat across the road and drop it back in again. Pretty cool setup. So in the next episode, we'll talk about their transition from going from trailer sailors to offshore cruisers. And that will be coming up in an episode soon. So we're going to take another quick break here. And up next, we'll cover the sailing news. Okay, we're back, and we've got a couple sailing stories that we were going to talk about this week, or sailing, cruising, boating stories, whatever you want to call them. And this first one is a callback to a previous story we did.
Boaty McBoatface!
Yeah, the Boaty McBoatface story. So if you remember this, when we talked about it a couple podcasts back, the UK is building a new research ship, and they were put out a contest to name the boat. And somebody put in the name Boaty McBoatface, which instantly became a massive hit. 124,000 people voted for it. It was by a landslide the favorite name that they wanted to name the research boat.
But I thought they didn't like it.
It was kind of a joke. You know, okay. It was the person that put it in even felt bad. That he said, I was just joking. It, you know, you don't really have to name the boat Boaty McBoatface. and they didn't intend to take that name anyway. They wanted it to be, it's a serious research vessel. They wanted something, you know, important, a historical figure or something. So they have decided on the name, and the name is going to be the RRS Sir David Attenborough. And, well, it's a research ship. And Sir David Attenborough, if anybody's not familiar with him, he was a television legend, a natural scientist, evangelist, who turned 90 recently, and he said he was truly honored by the result. He spent over six decades doing mind-blowing wildlife documentaries and work with broadcasting and entertained and informed millions. So just a scientific, I guess, broadcasting figure in the UK that they thought was very fitting for the name. But the Boaty McBoatface supporters will not be disappointed because... On the Sir David Attenborough research ship will be a very high-tech, remotely operated undersea vehicle that is going to be named Boaty McBoatface.
Oh, that's fun!
So Boaty McBoatface will live on the research
ship. Boaty McBoatface. That's just fun to say.
Yeah, so I'm sure every time they launch the remote vehicle, they'll say, go get them, Boaty, you know? Get out there and do some good research, buddy. So the Sir David Attenborough is still being, I don't know if it's been launched yet, but they're working on it. And it's set to set sail in 2019 with Boaty McBoatface on board. So I thought that was pretty cool that they figured out what name they wanted to name it. And our next story definitely fits in the category of sailing news that is very unusual. So in,
guess what this is, folks? Another name.
Another
city.
I have to be very careful how I pronounce this.
Can I pronounce it?
Yeah.
Fukuyama.
Ha. Now you'll know why I was taking a second thought about
it's
how to pronounce that one.
Fukuyama for everybody out
Fukuyama
there.
In Hiroshima Prefecture. Comes a story about a sailing ship that has just got a new set of sails, and they are completely made of denim. And I'll put a picture in the show notes. They're like a dark blue and light blue striped denim. And the boat is a very pretty boat. It looks like a schooner, probably about 60 feet long. And it's got a lot of sails. It's got like eight sails. So it's got a whole schooner setup. It's got a square sail up top. And it's very striking with these blue sails on it. But what makes this thing unusual is it's the sailing vessel is called Ami. And set sail on July 26 with its new sails as part of a project called Cruising Jeans. It's a project dreamed up by the Kaihara Company, which is Japan's largest manufacturer of denim and blue jeans. So they took denim and they made sails for this boat. And what's cool about the project is they're going to sail this boat from one place to another. I think it's here in the story. So they're going to go from Fukuyama to Namazu in the Shizuoka Prefecture on August 3rd. And they're going to go through the waters of Kawaga, Hyogo. Wakayama and the Mie prefectures. And all the time sailing these denim sails. And when they're done with the journey, they're going to take the sails off and they're going to make blue jeans out of them.
Oh, sweet. So they will see, I was thinking that maybe they were like recycled blue jeans.
No.
Made into sails.
It's nice new blue jean material and they are going to make them into blue jeans. So you could have a pair of blue jeans made out of sailboat sails.
So what do you think that are? Acid wash and...
Salt washed. Salt and sea breeze washed. I'm sure they'll come up with, you know, some kind of marketing on it. And can you imagine how much those jeans are going to cost in Japan that have been on the water? It's probably $1,000 for a pair of jeans. And our last story comes from the American Sailing Association. And they've just recently come out with a new mobile gaming app called Sailing Challenge. And this came out on August 1st, and I've downloaded the app. I think it's $3.99, so it's not a free app or cheap app. But they originally used this as a teaching aid for the ASA sailing instructors to help illustrate the sailing principles. And it's got a really cool format to it, takes you through. It's kind of like an online class that takes you through all the fundamentals of sailing. And what's cool about this, I caught my eye in the story, is the software, the game, was developed by the founder of Atari. Remember Atari games?
Oh, yeah. What's my first game system?
My first computer actually was an Atari computer. I did programming on Atari computer. Nolan Bushnell was the founder and visionary from Atari, and he's also a sailor. So they tapped him. He's got a new educational software company called Brain Rush, and they tapped them to work on this. And I really liked it. It was a cool game. It takes you through the basics first. There's different sections on the points of sail, parent wind, which was interesting on the parent wind. I've never really played around with that, thinking about the angles. It does all kinds of angles on a parent wind. Sail trim teaches you how to best trim your sails. And then tacking and jibing, and then rules of the road and docking. Even gives you some ideas on how to think about winds and other things for docking. So. And then once you're done with that, you can put them all together and you do these sails around little courses. I've got a chance to get back into it and play it and see how fast I can get. Maybe on a future podcast, I'll put out my best time and see if anybody can beat the best time. We'll have a top sailing road sailor who's got the absolute best time on the app. So check it out. I thought it was pretty cool. It's in the both the Apple Store and Google Play, called Sailing Challenge by the ASA. So that is it for the sailing news, and we're going to take a break, and up next is our product of the week. Okay, we're going to go into our product of the week, and this week we've got something that'll help you battle the bugs of summer. We're going to be going out next weekend, and I'm sure we'll put this into good use. Yep. Especially, you know, it got me thinking about this with all the stuff going on with the Zika virus and there's some other bad mosquito viruses going around. And it's probably not as affecting some people in the world as others, but we're definitely feeling it down here in Florida. It seems like it's we're hearing more and more cases. So this is the Thermacell mosquito repeller. And if you never heard of these, essentially it's a small handheld device that uses a butane cartridge. And it heats up a little pad that is on a metal plate, and it releases a scent. And they have proven that this makes a huge difference in mosquitoes, no-see-ums, and sand fleas. And essentially what it does, they say they've done tests, and you can go on the website, I'll post some of the results, around the world in some of the worst mosquito areas in Brazil and some of these other areas where within a 15 feet radius of this, so it's usually seven feet apart from, so on either side of it, it'll eliminate and avoid mosquitoes up to 97%.
Wow.
So
mosquitoes, yeah, we've seen a huge difference with them.
Yeah, really does make a difference. It just creates this barrier, the scent that the mosquitoes don't like, so they stay away from it. And we'll even put it inside the boat. Sometimes you have little cracks in your screens and stuff, and the mosquitoes want to get through those, you know, if it's in a really bad mosquito area. And so we'll run it in the boat before we close up the boat with the air conditioner at night. And it just, the mosquitoes don't want to come in the boat because that smell is coming out from the boat and they stay away from it. So we've seen a big difference in using these. They are very reasonable. They run about $22, $23 on Amazon. Come in all kinds of different colors. They have a white one that looks kind of marine looking. So I'll put the link in the show notes. They're in our store. The show notes are there. And then I'll also put in a link for the refills. There's these butane packs and these little pads. And they last a long time. I mean, the butane packs will last you a couple nights, and the pads, they're really not that expensive. So and you know what? When there's mosquitoes bad, you will pay anything to get rid of them. And we've seen a big difference in that. So we really like those. And then they also make one that's a little square lantern that's a little bit more attractive if you want something to hang on your boat. And that one looks cool too. We don't have that one, but we've heard it works well. And another thing we want to mention is we got a product in, recommendation in from one of our listeners from Richard in the UK. He recommended a Bluetooth receiver that he uses, he really likes, called the Dussel. It's a little really small, like probably an inch long by a half inch wide. And essentially he says it comes in really handy because there's so many places and different radios you may have, and you buy a boat and it has an older radio in it and doesn't have Bluetooth. Well, this essentially turns any radio that has a normal 3.5 millimeter plug in it into a Bluetooth receiver.
Which, this just reminded me, our radio died. And yeah, we're going out of town possibly this weekend. we sorry guys, I just had a brain thought here. Yeah, we got to order a new radio.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do it on our Amazon store, which is the next thing we talk about. So as we always talk about anything that you're buying on Amazon, please, please stop over to our website first. Click on our link, and you can find all those links on the Help TSR link on the top of our website. And the Amazon links are always in the show notes for all the products and for our general store link. And we've added a bunch of countries. So pretty much all the European countries and a number of other countries around the world are in there. So if you're listening in another country and you're going to buy something on Amazon, help us out and buy it through our link. You pay the same amount and we get a small commission from Amazon. It's really one of the main areas that we get any support on the podcast, and we really appreciate that. And then on social media, definitely keep following us on social media. We keep adding things on Facebook and Instagram. Still haven't seen anybody with their summer pictures on Instagram.
You guys must be leading a boring summer.
I guess so. So if you put a picture up on Instagram or anywhere else, you can also do this on Facebook or anywhere, and you hashtag the Sailing Road, and it'll go into an area where it'll we'll be able to see it as all of our listener pics.
We did get some on Facebook just recently from a couple people. Which, yeah, Facebook's a little weird with having to see it, but we did get a couple hashtags or at Sailing Road, however you do it on Facebook. So thanks, guys. We appreciate them.
And definitely go out and check out our YouTube channel, too, where it's, it seems like we're getting probably more subscribers on YouTube than anything. I probably get 5 or 10 a day coming onto YouTube, which is really popular these days. A lot of people are spending a lot of time on YouTube. So check out our channel. We're constantly putting content out there, and we'll continue to develop some new videos there. And we always talk about, we really need your help to spread the word on the podcast as you're out sailing around this summer. Definitely tell your sailing folk, friends about it. We'd really appreciate that. Just spreading the word makes a huge difference. If you see one of our links in Facebook, share that out to your sailing friends. That'd be helpful. And we haven't seen any reviews on iTunes lately. So if you are a new listener, go out to the review area in iTunes. That makes a big difference too. Helps people see the podcast and move us up on some of the lists. And I think that's it. Did you have anything else?
Nah.
You
miss anything? You're okay. Good at talking. You got it.
So that's it for this week. We'd love to hear from you. It's great. We don't really hear from that many people that listen to the podcast. We might get one or two in between podcasts. It just brightens our whole day when we hear somebody's really enjoying it. And they talk
Robert
about...
Robert really made us laugh.
Yeah. And they talk about what they're going to be doing or their plans. Or they have a couple years and they're going to go off cruising. So definitely tell us about that. You can send us an email at crew@thesailingroad.com. And that is it for this week. So thanks for listening. We really appreciate all your support, and we hope to see you on the water soon.
See you, everybody.